Good morning, Arizona homeowners. Why don't you walk around with me here, Rosie, on the house, and let's get our hands in the soil. Fall is in the air. You can smell it. You can feel it in your bones. You can just, you can see it in the plants out there. It's 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you to join the conversation. Text in to 411-923 or email pictures to info@rosieonthehouse.com. And Mr. Jay Harper will do his best to put his years of experience and third-generation gardening knowledge to work for you. See if we can't get a successful garden this fall.
Well, successful gardens start with soil preparation. And soil preparation starts with working, in our case, organic material back into the soil that's pretty much disappeared by this time of the summer with the heat and the watering that we do. And, you know, it just kind of goes away. Consequently, that's why you don't see black, dark, rich-looking soils here. They're kind of tan and, you know, looking, and there's just no organic material in them, and we have to reincorporate it every season. So that's the first thing that people should start doing. If you had a summer garden, you know, it's probably peaked out, pooped out. If you go down to places like Crooked Sky Farms and some of the big local farms that grow produce, they're tilling. In fact, some of them are starting to replant already. If you really want to see something spectacular, drive down to Yuma and drive around and see what's going on right now with farmers getting ready, prepping the fields for what becomes the salad bowl of the United States here in a couple of months. But that's exactly what they're doing. They're working the soil. They're putting organic material back in the soil. They're cultivating it. They're getting ready way ahead of time. So when that magic day hits, and that for most homeowners, for backyard gardeners, is probably about Labor Day weekends. That's only two weekends away, I think, about two weeks. It just makes the job a whole lot easier, and you'll do a much better job if you break it into small bites and pieces and kind of attack it over the next couple, 3 weeks, and, you know, get those bags of compost and start working them in, and you just don't have to kill yourself that way.
That's always a good way to start gardening, when you don't have to kill yourself.
I agree. It's just not supposed to be work. It's supposed to be fun. So, you know, do it a little at a time. Do it as you can, and by that magic day, you'll be ready to go.
And what are we planting? You'd mentioned lettuce. We've got the salad bowl of America.
Well, the easiest way for me to remember what makes up our winter, our cool season crops, are things that we eat the leaf of, the root of, or the stem of. So any leafy things, you know, spinach, chard, kale, lettuces, you know, those types of things, mustards, any of the greens, any of the leafy things. And then, you know, the things we eat, a stem or a modified stem or kind of a flower of, so cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, what we call coal crops. And then, of course, root crops would be carrots, beets, turnips, radishes. And there's some funky things like kohlrabi and different things that are really good. I like them. But so there are all kinds of root crops that do well here, too. So roots, leaves, stems. You can. There are a couple of exceptions. Labor Day is kind of the magic day to plant peas. If you like peas, you know, it's nothing better than just picking snow peas off the vine and popping them right in your mouth. The problem is you don't ever have enough to make it into the kitchen with. Winter squashes, pumpkins, those types of things can all be planted now too.
Now, we've talked a lot about container gardens because it's a lot easier to manage than having to crawl around on your hands and knees and up and down, up and down, up and down. Going to a raised planter type, can you just get bagged soil and
absolutely
put it in and it's all good to go? Or well, should you add some more?
No, I mean, it depends on how big the raised garden or, you know, when we're talking a container garden, a raised garden is a container garden. And there's some pretty big raised gardens, you know, and they might be 2 or 3 feet deep. Well, it would cost a small fortune to go buy nice bagged prepared garden soil like a Mel's mix or a good potting soil and fill it. You know, we're talking, you know, as much as maybe 2 or 3 cubic yards of that material would cost hundreds of dollars. So what folks can do is get some bulk material or compost or buy some lesser expensive materials. Depending on the depth of your bed, you can fill them up a ways. You can even use some rock or gravel for the first 6 inches or so. We need about 6 to 10 inches of that good planting medium to grow in. So just keep that in mind. And the rest below it, just make sure it drains well. It kind of defeats the purpose of just going out and getting native soil and backfilling it with that, because it just gets hard and compacted below that. Use some gravel, some sand. You can kind of layer it and then maybe work your way up into, just some compost mixed with some native soil if you want. And then on top of that, put, good garden soil. Good composted material in bags mixed with good garden soil. If you want to cut the cost down a little bit, that works really well too.
Do you have a favorite bag maker? I mean, we talk about the square foot garden a lot. Mel's Mix is a pretty good one.
Really good one if you just want to dump something in and plant right in it. Pretty hard to beat it. Or the Grow Well potting soil. Their premium potting soil is awfully good. As well, if you just want to just plant right in it. There's a line out there called Happy Frog. That's a lot of people really like that. And you talk about container gardens and your raised beds and square foot gardens, but with so many, if you haven't been around South Scottsdale these days, the condominiums and apartments and even a lot of places, not just South Scottsdale, but the kind of the new renaissance of living is going to lend itself to some type of, if you want a vegetable garden, you're going to have to do it in a pot or a raised garden or some type of contained deal. And the beauty of that is it's pretty easy. There's no taking 2 or 3 weekends to go out there and get your soil ready. It's go get a bag of soil, dump it in the pot and plant. You're ready. So really good way to go.
You just need to have the trunk space or the bed of a truck to transport it then at that point.
Places will deliver. So you got to be able to haul it. Of course, hauling bulk materials is even harder. So there's a lot of ways to do it. But the nice thing about that is you can do a pot or two at a time. You don't have to do your whole backyard, whole back patio or balcony or whatever. And you can make break it up into smaller little projects.
Fall vegetable gardening. 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you to join the conversation. But before we get to our calls, let's cover lawns. We have a decision. Do we fertilize and extend it, or do we shut off and get ready for overseeding?
We're at about that critical time. We're getting close to Labor Day, 1st of September. It might depend on the state of your lawn. I have a pretty shady backyard, and it just looks pretty crappy right about now. The ryegrasses have all died. The Bermuda doesn't do very well. So I'm at the point I'm not going to fertilize anymore now. We're just kind of keeping it watered and for another few weeks, and then we'll scalp it and overseed it. If you're not going to plant a winter lawn, then you certainly want to fertilize again. If you haven't aerated, if you haven't added any organic material, this would be a great time to do that. But if you're going to plant a winter lawn, you probably don't want to push too much growth now. You probably don't want to feed the lawn unless it's just been in pretty bad condition and it's distressed. So if you're going to overseed, maybe don't feed yet. If you're not going to overseed, one or maybe two more fertilizations. Depending on the weather and the temperatures, we get into September, October. You can keep a Bermuda grass lawn pretty green, late into the fall if it's in good condition and nutrition and we fertilize it. And that's where I like the organic fertilizers like a Hickman's or somebody like that, where you'll get that 6, 8, 10, 12 weeks of feeding. Doesn't green things up real quick, but it gives you a long-lasting fertilization. So if you are not going to plant a winter lawn, that would be a great way to go right now.
And how soon, if you wanted that rye and you wanted that different style of grass, what's the earliest possible point you could start that?
The earliest possible is probably about mid-September. I don't advocate that. I think that's damaging to the Bermuda grasses. We're causing it to be scalped and stressed a whole lot earlier than it naturally would want to be. Remember, we just said you could keep Bermuda grasses green, heck, some years up till Christmas. So if we're going to make it go dormant in September, when it really by nature wouldn't go dormant until Christmas time, that's very stressful to that Bermuda grass lawn. Then we're going to introduce a competitor right on top of it and cause it to be, dormant, and then also have to compete because it's still wanting to try and grow, and that ryegrass is going to grow quicker and shade it out and take nutrients. So I really don't, for homeowners, I think the middle of October to the about the first or second week of November is the ideal window. And even as late as Halloween, I think is almost perfect. That way you're only asking that Bermuda to be dormant maybe a month longer than it really would want to be. And it's also cool enough. You know, if you overseed ryegrasses while it's still pretty hot, you can run into some fungus problems. It grows so fast. If you don't mow it quick enough, you know, you get some real issues. Now, people will say, well, what about the golf courses? What about the, well, you know.
Budgets are a lot different.
Their budgets are different.
Time to manage, it's a lot different.
And their revenue stream is based on when they can get players back on that golf course. And, of course, something happens about the early part of October. These folks start showing up from all over parts of the country to our hotels and resorts and coming back from long, hot summers. They're living here and they're wanting to play golf on a nice green golf course. Well, they don't want to be just starting to overseed and shut down for a couple weeks for that. They want to be ready to go. And, of course, they're not adverse to spending lots of money on fungicides and different treatments to keep that from happening. So you really can't base the homeowner's situation on the commercial situation. It's a whole lot different.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. And we are here for you, the Arizona homeowners. So let's get right to it. Cliff in Tucson's first on the line. Good morning and welcome to the program, Cliff.
I heard you talking about grass a little bit. So I have a Bermuda lawn, and been in the home about 5 years, and I take pretty good care of it. And this year and last year, I've had a problem with what I believe is fungus in an area of the lawn. And I've treated it this year a couple of times with Scott's Brand granular fungicide, and it really looks bad. And I am just not sure what to do at this point.
Okay, do you plant a winter lawn?
I do. Yes, I do. Okay. I usually overseed about the beginning of October.
Well, it could be a fungus, especially as wet as it's been this summer. But it also could be, you know, my backyard, my ryegrass literally just died some of it a week or so ago. I thought I had done a pretty good job of cutting it short. I dethatched. I did like I always do, and this year, for some reason, that ryegrass just hung on and hung on and hung on, and I could see it because it's a different color green, and it looks awful, and it looks a lot like a fungus situation because it's spotty and patchy and different things. So it could be that as well, but fungus is a whole lot easier to prevent than it is to clear up. And if you're having this continuous problem, next year, maybe at the beginning of the summer, start using that fungicide as a preventative. Make sure you're dethatching. Make sure you're core aerifying. Fungus is opportunistic. You know, it when conditions are present and conducive for it, like moisture and warm temperatures, that it's going to flourish. Don't water at night. Water in the morning. Don't let the lawn get too long. So anything we can do to kind of aerate, dry up, cause air to flow, is going to help. Also using some sulfur. Soil sulfur is a pretty good natural fungicide. So, you know, anything we can do to help soils drain, percolate, thatch removal, aeration, all of those things are going to be enemies to the conditions that fungus like to thrive in.
Okay, great. Do you think I've damaged the roots of the tiff that's there?
It's hard to say. The only way to know that would be to actually dig up some chunks of it and kind of see what the roots look like. a lot of times, you know, fungi don't often get so deep in there. So we don't live in a place that has really, really bad fungus problems. We're not that wet. So they don't often go that deep. You just get this sloughing off of the tops and the blades where you can just kind of peel them away. You know, at this point of the game, you know, you're pretty close to the 1st of September. You know, another treatment of fungicide, you know, then, you know, kind of got a decision to make to whether you want to get that Bermuda grass back looking really good before fall, or if you're going to plant a winter lawn, maybe you just kind of, you know, don't worry too much about it and get the winter lawn in here in a month or so, and you'll be fine.
We appreciate the call, Cliff. Let us know how that helps green up and clean up your lawn. As we move from Tucson to Glendale, let me shoot a couple rapid texts at you. First one from a 480 area code. Is it too early to plant grapefruit, or should I wait till it's cooler?
Well, citrus trees could technically be, if they're locally grown, could be planted pretty much all summer. But fall is a great time to plant. And if you're this close, we're this close to then now, I would probably wait another, maybe middle of September, early October. Great time to, we're going into really our best planting season of the year, and that's fall.
And Gordy wants to know, what type of beet seeds do you recommend?
Oh, man, there are, you know, there's some really fun ones. The mixed colored beets are really good. If you really want to have some fun, colorful salads and meals, I like those mixed ones. Detroit Dark Red is the good old standard beet, still does pretty well if you just want a good basic red beet. So I think it's still pretty hard to beat it.
And that's the only time and place I'll ever hear the words beets and fun in the same sentence.
You don't like beets?
I'm not a fan. I don't know, it always tastes like I'm eating dirt.
Oh, man.
I can never get them clean enough.
You haven't roasted them then.
Okay, I'll have to try a roasted beet.
Cut them in slices, put them on a cookie sheet, a little balsamic vinegar and some olive oil and roast them. Oh, man, those are good.
All right. Well, I'll have to try it now.
All right. My mouth's watering.
Let's see if we can help Kelly find a vine in Glendale before our bottom of the hour news. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning. Yeah, so I had a question with vines. My husband and I were wanting to plant some sort of vines near a window. We have enough kind of cat's claw in our backyard, so we're kind of wanting something different. But it does have full sun exposure, and I just didn't know what you thought would be good.
Well, my favorite, if it's sunny, is the tangerine.
Oh, you got 20 seconds.
Oh, sorry, tangerine beauty crossvine. Looks a little bit like cat claw, bigger leaf, flowers more often, orangey flower. Awesome.
There you go. Tangerine what?
Tangerine beauty crossvine.
Pick up this Saturday edition of the Arizona Republic for Rosie's home improvement column, where we cover the most important topics that every homeowner needs to know.
In the Outdoor Living Hour, Jay Harper of Harper's Nursery in the studio at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you to join the conversation. And we are here for you, the Arizona homeowner, whatever it is you want to talk about, your garden, your lawns, your trees, your shrubs. If you plant it, grow it, trim it, chop it, shrub it, burn it, we'll handle it.
I'm all over that burn.
You got you. He woke up.
Burn? What? Torch?
Man, talk about burn. You ought to see my yard. You know, I'm on this like major water conserving mission thing.
Yeah.
You know, so as we left for a week, I thought, well, gosh, surely we're gonna get a rain in that week. So I dialed the, I erred on the super conservative side. Big mistake.
You know,
y'all
question
did,
for
didn't
you.
Y'all did get a drop of water while we
no,
were
no, we were getting so much rain and then it just quit. Question for you, though. You don't have any grass in the front.
Right.
Kids are all gone.
Yes.
I know you got dogs. They'd be fine. Why not just do a winter lawn? Let the summer lawn go.
Yeah, I know that's your MO. I just travel even more in the winter than I do in the summer.
Yeah, but the winter's easier. It's even easier, though. It doesn't need as much water or as often. It needs mowed a little bit. Hire a guy to mow it and just do a winter lawn.
I know. You've been trying to talk me into that for a long time.
I'm considering it myself.
We always try and push our Bermuda as far as we can into September so that when we have our birthday party, we've got a nice lawn. Well, we don't have their kids' age right now. They're not really that. They'd rather take one or two friends and go do something big instead of having seven, eight, ten kids over for
in
a hot
backyard.
Dog.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at cutting it off sooner so we can overseed quicker because everyone loves to get out there and roll around on the rye lawn. The Bermuda, they're like, when's the soft grass coming back?
Right. Yeah, I think the day will come when we will finally adopt more of a Midwestern mentality about our landscape and gardening. I know we've talked about this before, but we expect our landscapes here. For some reason, we have this notion that, and it is, we don't have snow, we don't have freeze. You know, you look out the window and it's beautiful out there, but you walk out there when it's 122 degrees. And other than a few plants that thrive in that kind of weather, stuff suffers. And it's, you know, why not have nobody has a longer stretch of good weather than we do from October to May. You know, it's gorgeous. Let's plant lawns and shrubs and, you know, I'm not talking about your shade trees and your substantial foundation plantings. There are plenty of those things that do well right through the summer, and they're permanent. But as far as lawns and quote-unquote temporary things, color, annuals, and just blow it off come summertime. You know, I mean, the people in the Midwest, it's cold, it's snowy. They don't worry about, you know, what their vinca or petunias look like. They're dead, you know. I don't know. I would think we'd get there at some point.
Well, maybe one
and
day.
And water may be the way we do it. You know, it's going to be more and more expensive to water in the summertime, and it may cause people to do less in the summertime. Just a thought.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you as we bring Dave into the conversation from Benson, Arizona. Good morning, sir.
Hi, good morning. I have a quick question for you, gentlemen, please. Last fall, I planted 27 dwarf Japanese garden junipers, and I planted them on a slope. And they made it through the winter. And now I have three of them that look healthy and are growing. I have about a half a dozen of them that look like they could die any day. There's a little green, but it's more brown than green. And all the rest of them are just dead. And I was wondering if you could give me some advice on what I might have done wrong with these things.
Well, you planted dwarf Japanese junipers. That's what you did wrong.
Yeah.
It's just not a great plant for here.
You
know, it's a hard one to grow here. It's, you know, it's low growing on that hot ground. I can't remember the last time I saw a great landscaper planting of what is probably Procumbens nana junipers growing. You know, there are other really low, tight growing ground covers, if that's what you want to plant. None that might give you that exact look, although one that's very close is the little dwarf or spreading emu or Eremophila. I think it's Outback Sunrise, and it actually gives you some color. But it has kind of an evergreeny look to it, the way it grows. Myoporum would be another one that would give you something similar. But if that's what you're trying to do is grow that kind of a look in a ground cover, you need to find something else besides that particular plant. It's just not going to do well here.
I know that's a hard thing to think about doing when you've put all that time and invested into it, but your success ratio there was less than
8%. Three out of however many, and you know, those could go any day. I mean, we're not done with summer yet. I know we've kind of been jokingly saying we're smelling fall and everything else, but even the first day of fall is still a month away.
I love
technically by the calendar, and we know that it's usually more like the 1st of October before it gets more like fall here in the middle of October, more realistic. So got a couple of months that those – so the rest maybe – he may not be done losing junipers yet, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Well, we appreciate the call, Dave. Hope that's helping. Hope one of those suggestions on alternatives works for you. Now, all of those you were talking about ground covers, and that's just, I don't know what a Japanese dwarf juniper looks like. When I hear juniper, I think when I walk into the, when I pull into the parking lot at Chasm in Sedona, they've got these huge juniper, alligator juniper trees that are massive.
Well, juniper's a big, big genus of plants. You know, I mean, from large alligator junipers down to very tight growing ground covers like the one he was talking about, and everything in between. And some junipers are actually pretty heat and drought tolerant. You know, sea greens, some of the ones we just don't landscape with them very much anymore because that kind of Midwestern, Eastern look has gone out of fashion. But the low, tight growing junipers, even when we landscaped in beds and we flooded beds with bubblers and had grass around everything and put bark in things, even a lot of those, even at that time, I've tried them because I kind of like that landscape look, but I could never get them to do very well. You know, you'd have three or four and one would die in the middle. You know, it just never would quite have that consistent look that you needed it to look. Tough plant to grow here.
Now, before we get back to our calls at 1-888-767-4348, I'm sure the landscape industry is just about the same as every other industry that we have, looking for good, reliable help. I mean, the demand for labor right now is pretty high. And we've got shop out of schools. We've got, you know, only a few trade schools left. You have construction career days trying to attract. We have Arizona Nursery Association's Shade Conference coming up. If you're looking for, if you love the outdoors, if you love working for plants and you want to turn it into a career, man, I think that's probably one of the best conferences to go and just see everything that the industry has to offer.
Good point. And or if you are already in the industry and you need continuing education units or credits, it's a good way to get those. There are some great different classes and tracks you can take at the same time.
And you go to azna.org, Arizona Nursery Association. The Shade Conference coming up is the Thursday, the
31st. Mm-hmm.
So not next Thursday, but the following.
Right. So you're a little less than 2 weeks away. So
always a good event. Full day event starts in the morning. You've got three or four sessions. You have lunch, then you have three or four in the afternoon. And there's four or five speakers at a time. So you got to go online, get the calendar, find out what's most applicable to you.
Right.
Get signed up.
And during, before and then during lunch, there's also a what they call a marketplace. So there's a little trade show, mini trade show, where you can look at some of the newest products and things that are coming out that are applicable to the industry.
We have Rose in Tempe texting about an ash tree. And they're losing leaves, and all of them have holes that appear to be on the ground around the trees. So I'm not quite sure I understand exactly what the text is saying, but ash trees in general, I've seen some do very well and some do very poor.
Yeah, you know, ash trees need to be planted in grass, heavily irrigated lawn bed type situations to do really well here. And some varieties of ash trees do better than others. You know, I'm not a big fan of the shamel or evergreen ash. It takes tons of water. It's got a big soft leaf that sunburns real easy. It also freezes here instead of going dormant. It kind of... So I think it's a bad choice. Native, the Fantex ash, which is a derivation of our Arizona native ash, good old Arizona ash, Modesto ash, those will do okay, but they still do not lend themselves to being in a xeriscape gravel type landscape. They just need tons of water. And so you see a lot of, especially landscapes that were converted. Maybe they were grass at one time with a big ash tree in them. Then people have killed the grass and put gravel and went to a drip irrigation instead of flood irrigation or heavy sprinkler watering irrigation. And they suffer. The other thing that could happen, and it sounds like with this one, The cicadas really love ash trees, and they, you know, they're out there laying their eggs on the ends of all of those little tender branches on ash trees. And that might be the holes she's seen under the trees, or the, you know, the emerging cicadas coming out of the ground, climbing up on the trunk, shedding their skin, and then going out and laying their eggs. See a lot of damage, tip damage, little branch damage, dieback on ash trees that way too. But if you've got an ash tree, an existing ash tree, and it's in a gravel lawn, you probably need to supplement the water. Take a hose out there, you know, once a week or so in the really hot parts of the summer, and just give it a, let it run all day, all night, something like that.
On a soft trickle.
Very slow
trickle. You don't turn
trickle.
The hose all the way on and
no,
just
no.
leave it.
No, no. Let it soak for hours and hours and hours and hours.
We have a couple in line and one on a drip system. And, you know, sometimes those get plugged up. Man, you can tell as soon as one of those emitters gets plugged. A tree, you can tell within days that it's not getting the water that the rest of them are. You fix that, and, I mean, they green right back up.
Yeah. The other thing that happens if they've gone long periods with, you know, with some of these leaves falling off and with damage, they also have a fairly thin skin. They don't have a big, heavy barked trunk. So they sunburn real easy. And then once we get sunburn and we get bark peeling off and, you know, we get sooty canker and we get all these other issues that are involved when that trunk gets sunburned that cause them to start going downhill as well.
In the nursery with Jay Harper of Harper's Nursery. Welcome back. You are tuned in to Rosie on the House, your Saturday morning tradition for 29 years. Join this segment now with by Martha in Sun City. Wants to talk about her little condo courtyard. Good morning, Martha.
Good morning. Yes, I'm the landscape chairperson for my condominium association. And
my condolences.
The unit that face north looking out on the courtyard.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, there's not sunshine. And we're taking out some dense hedges that are along that row. And so I am calling to see what I might replace them with. You know, hopefully, you know, is there a succulent or something that requires less water but that will tolerate the shade? And we're planting it under our windows so it, you know, unless it's trimmed, it would need to stay below 3 feet.
How wide an area do we have to work with?
How wide?
Yeah.
Let's see. Probably 4 feet.
Okay. So we need it to be something that stays under windowsill height, and that would be about the same width as the bed we
correct.
Have.
Uh-huh.
So we're in pretty good shape there.
Okay.
There are some things like elephant's food, which is a succulent, portulacaria, elephant's food, that very, very hardy, will take,
uh-huh.
will
okay.
grow
and
in.
It will tolerate the shade.
It will grow in shade uh-huh. just fine. There's some agaves, some of the more tropical agaves that do well in shady areas like that, that you could use there. So you could do a combination if you wanted more of a, you know, a succulent kind of a look. Those would be two really good choices for that area.
Okay. All right. I thank you very much. You've been helpful to me.
You're welcome.
And I appreciate your program.
Well, thank you, Martha. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with us, inviting us into your home. 7 to 11 every Saturday morning. We've got a lot going on in the outdoor living hour as we've coming into fall. We've got our transition of lawns coming up rapidly. We're going to have our citrus fertilizing coming up around Labor Day. We've got fall planting. There's, like you said, this is the premier planting season of Arizona if you're below about 4,000.
Yeah, so for Phoenix, Tucson, particularly, Yuma, Casa Grande, you know, so the southwestern desert of Arizona, and even up into Prescott and Payson for planting certain things, like trees, hardy trees, fall is a great time to do that as well.
And when you get up into snow country, that's you just start getting the wax out for the skis. And Start looking at the sky,
well,
waiting
do,
for the white flakes.
They do some things for fall, like pansies and mums and, you know, winter hardy things. But as we mentioned earlier, you get that, you know, it's a seasonal deal. And they go crazy in the summertime. They just pack their lawns full of beautiful stuff. And then, you know, when winter comes, yeah, they go enjoy and do other things. It's, you know, you don't stress about it.
We need to follow their seasonal calendar and not worry.
Yeah, it was just the opposite, though.
Where so, they've got white in the summertime, we've got brown in the winter.
No, we have brown in the
summer. Brown in the summer, yeah. White, yeah. I got
summer
it
is our new summer is the new winter. How's that?
There we go.
Let's start thinking of it that way.
Very good. And you're headed off from here?
Yeah, headed back to the nursery for, you know, fun and games and frolic. So keeping things watered and we'll be there till about 3 o'clock today. This time of year, we open early, close a little early, and for a few more weeks, and then Labor Day will be here and off and running.
Mr. Harper of Harper's Nursery, as always, thank you for your time in the studio. That's our Outdoor Living Hour. Happens every Saturday morning at 8 o'clock. Generally speaking, this is where we go into our 9 o'clock hour of open lines, but a scheduling, we've switched our hours for this week. 9 o'clock will be our topic hour. 10 will be our open line hour. At 9 o'clock, y'all have a special guest coming in?
We do have a special guest, Miss Allison Carpenter from Shar's Kitchen. And we're going to be talking about tips, tricks, and tactics for tailgating. So if you've got tailgating questions or you have a tailgating tip, trick, or tactic, feel free to give us a call and get online and let's share stories and compare stories. 1-888-767-4348. She's got some new appliances that you put on your tailgate of your truck. You aren't going to believe what you can produce quickly, simply, and easily. She's got some great ideas on making tailgating a lot more fun and a lot less work.
If you're a subscriber to our weekly newsletter, there's a couple notes here that the blog link may have been not
hacked
by something.
Oh, no.
So just if you're looking for that article on tailgating, you just go to rosieonthehouse.com, click on blog, and it's our most recent post. So you can get it that way, and we'll troubleshoot what happened digitally in it, but you can still always get it right there at rosieonthehouse.com. You'll see the blog right in the menu bar. And once you click on that, bam, right there on top. Tips and fun equipment to make your tailgate a success. Going into football season.
It is the only place you can get our weekly article, Rosie on the House blog. Find it. Enjoy it. Let us know what topics you'd like us to cover. But today, it's tailgating.